Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another edition of KHY Community Radio's Capital Week. You're listening to Post for Politics, Iowa style, where we explore and analyze who's been making news in and around the state capital, what that news is, and what it all means. We are glad you're with us on this first Monday of the new year and on our first broadcast of this year. I'm Dennis Hart, joined as always by my partner in politics, Laura Bellin of the blog site Bleeding Heartland. Welcome, Laura, and Happy New Year.
Good to be here. Happy New Year.
We are going to take a look into our crystal balls tonight, Laura, to see what might be in store at the state legislature this year. And we're also going to look back at our first program of last year and see how our predictions for 2022 held up or how they didn't. But we're going to start with a U.S. Supreme Court decision on immigration, one that Governor Reynolds applauded. Laura, take it from there.
Well, this was an unusual court decision. This is what is called the shadow docket of the U.S. Supreme Court, where they issue rulings without having full briefings and oral arguments. It's related to the Title 42 policy, which was something that was instituted under President Trump that allowed the immediate expulsion of would-be immigrants seeking asylum as a public health emergency because of COVID. The Biden administration sought to end the policy, and a federal court found a couple of months ago that the policy should be vacated, and five Supreme Court justices stopped that order from going into effect. So this is very unusual. U.S. Supreme Court watchers said this is the kind of intervention that the U.S. Supreme Court normally does not do. You might even say it's a bit of an activist move. But Governor Kim Reynolds and most of the Republican politicians, they support this Title 42 policy. This will keep it in effect until the U.S. Supreme Court can hear arguments and decide on the merits of that case. So Governor Reynolds applauding that for now that policy will remain in effect at the southern border.
And it was an appeal by 19 Republican-led states, not including Iowa, that sought to keep Title 42 in place. The governor, in her words, said that crisis down at the border is one that President Biden and his administration have ignored for 2 years. Her words.
Yes, that's something. And the Republicans who are running for Congress this year all uniformly criticized the Biden administration for not doing enough about the southern border.
The Des Moines Register weighed in this weekend on what state Democrats don't know about what's coming next. All this in the wake of the National Democratic National Committee's Rules and Bylaws Committee voting to strip Iowa of its first in the nation caucuses in 2024. Basically, the Register's story says Democrats don't know what to do next.
Yes, the Democratic Party is in a bit of a limbo right now because Ross Wilburn, who has been the chair, has said he's not going to seek that position again. And near the end of this month, the party's governing body, the State Central Committee, is going to elect a new chair. So they're punting a little bit on this decision until after they have new leadership in place. I think it's a little bit less complicated than the Register made it sound. John Deeth, who has been a main volunteer organizer of the Johnson County Democrats for the last several caucus cycles, has pointed out that there's nothing in state law that says you have to do presidential selection at the caucuses. The Republican Party, on a couple of occasions when there was a Republican incumbent president on the ballot, they didn't do a presidential selection. So what Deeth has proposed, that the Democratic Party could hold caucuses 8 days before the first primary in accordance with state law, and then not have a presidential selection process, which would abide by the DNC rules that say no state outside that early group should have any kind of presidential selection. And then Iowa could do some form of presidential selection later, either at county conventions or district conventions. So I suspect that something like that is going to end up happening. But for now, the Iowa Democrats don't even know who's going to be leading them. So I'm not surprised that they weren't able to tell the Des Moines Register exactly how they're going to handle it.
And whatever Iowa Democrats decide to do, it is not likely to attract the participation of presidential candidates on the Democratic side, because there could be sanctions, there could be delegates stripped, all kinds of things could happen.
Yeah, I mean, the delegates stripped is, it's a minor issue. Iowa doesn't have a lot of delegates. I think when Joe Biden is very likely to run for reelection, this is not going to matter very much. If it were an open primary, like it will be in 2028, then I think it really matters, because if the presidential candidates who are competing for the nomination don't want to come campaign in Iowa because they don't want to be sanctioned, they don't want to be barred from televised debates, for instance, that's going to be a real problem for Iowa.
And the Register ran a front page story on Monday asking what will Iowa's GOP congressional members do? Iowa has a completely Republican congressional membership now. All four representatives are Republicans, the two U.S. senators. And basically, the Register said, well, they're going to talk about some big issues, none of them really surprising.
Well, I mean, let's first of all realize that the four members, we have three who are just going to be beginning their second terms, Randy Feenstra, Ashley Henson, and Marionette Miller-Meeks, and Zach Nunn, who was just elected for the first time in the third district. So it's like the opposite of seniority, right? So they're not going to be chairing any influential committees. They're probably not going to be chairing any influential subcommittees. Ashley Henson does have a seat on the Appropriations Committee. Marionette Miller-Meeks may have a seat on Energy and Commerce, but they're not really going to be in a position to craft legislation. But they have been talking about reducing inflation, addressing illegal immigration, and promoting biofuels, among other things. Also, given the divided government, you have to wonder how much of the legislation that passes the House this coming year is going to be approved in the Senate.
Okay, here comes the meat of our program tonight, the one that everybody's tuning in for, Laura. I just want you to know this. Our predictions on what the legislature is going to do this year. The state legislative session opens next Monday. We're going to have a complete report on it Monday night on Capitol Week. A reminder before we start this conversation, the GOP holds a 64-36 majority in the House, the state House, 34-16 in the Senate. That means they can do almost anything they want to do. Here's a prediction, Laura. This is a no-brainer. You and I will agree on this. They're going to try this. Governor Reynolds' school choice proposal, that's going to be a deal.
Yes. Well, it certainly is going to pass the Senate. It's passed the Senate before. The question in the House, I still think it's an open question, even with that 64-36 majority. Do they have the votes to pass the school voucher plan in the House? The rural school district superintendents and school board members are very against this. They think it would be bad for their schools. And I would probably say better than 50-50 chance they get the bill through, but I think there are enough Republican holdouts that they may be able to get some pretty significant concessions in the House before passing that bill. And I do think it's possible that even with this large majority, they won't be able to get it through the House.
When I meant when I said it's going to be a deal, I mean a big deal in terms of yaya going on at the legislature. A lot of talk about this. Both, again, she really wants this. She wanted it last year. She is consistent on this, and she's going to put the pressure on wherever she can.
It's a top priority, and Governor Reynolds is the chair of the Republican Governors Association this year, and she is not going to want a legislative failure, especially with such a large Republican majority in both chambers. So I think that she will do everything she can to get it through. But when I saw that recently that the House Speaker, Pat Grassley, said he's pretty confident that he thinks they have the votes, I think there is a little bit of bluffing there. I do not believe that he has the votes right now.
And we are going to find out on Capitol Week, week by week here as we go on. Another one, and this is probably second in priority, but it's there. Lowering property taxes. The Republicans really want to do this. They've cut taxes all over the place in Iowa in recent years, but now they're focusing on the property taxes.
And this is possibly going to be very different from the last time the legislature passed a major property tax cut was in 2013. That was focused on commercial property taxes rather than individual. And they to get it through at the time, the Democrats still controlled the Iowa Senate. And so to get it through, the legislature agreed to backfill or give a lot of state funding to local governments so they wouldn't lose out. The Republican leadership has already ended the backfill. So counties and city governments are not getting compensated for that lost commercial property tax revenue. And so that's the big concern right now is those organizations, the Iowa League of Cities and Association of Counties, they're extremely concerned that if property taxes are lowered again by state law, and then the state doesn't provide additional funding to the local governments, that's going to be a real problem for local services and particularly schools, since so much of school district budgets come out of local property taxes.
Well, here's one that's going to be very complex, and we'll try to break it down here. It's abortion. Republican leaders really want to further restrict abortion in Iowa. The governor wants it. Republicans want it in the legislature, but there's just a big but out there, and that is there's still a state Supreme Court decision that is on the way at some point. So let's break this down as simple as we can. Why don't Republicans just pass a bill right now banning abortion? Well, tell us.
Because when the Iowa Supreme Court overturned its abortion rights precedent in June, they said there is no fundamental right to abortion in the state constitution, but they didn't say what kind of a standard they would replace that with, which is very different from what the U.S. Supreme Court did. When they overturned Roe v. Wade, they said abortion regulations should be reviewed under what's called a rational basis standard. It's the easiest standard for a state law to pass. And that really clears the way for everything up to and including probably a total ban on abortion. But the Iowa Supreme Court has not said that yet. So I think there's some concern in the legislature that if they pass a new, very strict abortion ban, that the Iowa Supreme Court may say, well, no, actually, we think that the standard is some kind of a balancing test, like the undue burden test, which would mean that the state's interest in reducing abortions has to be balanced against the individual rights of people who are seeking abortion. So that's why they want to wait to see this case play out where the governor is trying to reinstate this 2018 abortion law.
So that decision by the court may not come until after the legislative session ends.
I think almost certainly it's very unlikely that it would be accelerated and it would come down fast enough for the Iowa Supreme Court to hand down a ruling before the legislature adjourns in late April or May. I mean, in fact, I think it's more likely that the decision would come during the Iowa Supreme Court's next term, which begins next August. So maybe they would hear the case in August or September and hand down a ruling in the fall. And again, that ruling may not actually answer this question. They could refuse the governor's request to reinstate the 2018 law on procedural arguments. They could say, no, this is a closed case. You have to pass a new law and let new litigation start. And that wouldn't answer the question of what kind of a standard. Is it the rational basis standard, which would allow almost a total abortion ban, or is it something different? So I'm wondering whether the Republican base is going to be content to sit around this entire legislative session and do nothing on abortion.
Meanwhile, there is lurking in the wings this plan that has already taken its first steps to pass a proposed constitutional amendment that would declare that Iowa recognizes no fundamental right to an abortion. That needs to be passed this year or next year for it to go on the ballot. And is it in limbo?
Well, right now, the legislative leadership has told the Cedar Rapids Gazette that they don't think there's any need to pass that constitutional amendment. This is the one that would not directly ban abortion, but it would say there is no constitutional right to abortion, and so it would open the door to a total abortion ban. And it's very similar to the language that was on the ballot in Kansas and Kentucky in 2022 and went down to defeat. And by the way, Kansas and Kentucky are even more Republican-leaning states than Iowa. And so I think that's why the leadership has said that they don't think they plan to pursue this constitutional amendment. But again, there may be people, there may be backbenchers in their legislative caucuses who demand to push forward with that amendment. Certainly the Iowa Right to Life organization still wants the amendment. And I wonder if there may be some horse trading and people saying that they don't want to pass. That was actually how the original 2018 law passed, that the six-week ban was because a group of senators, including Jake Chapman and Rick Bertrand and a few other people, said they wouldn't vote on any budget bills until the legislature passed this abortion ban. So something like that could happen this coming year.
And we need to say, reiterate, as we have many times on this broadcast, that in the midst of all of this discussion, abortion remains legal in Iowa up to 20 weeks of pregnancy.
Yes, and that is almost certain to continue, at least for the next 6 months and possibly longer, especially if the Iowa Supreme Court doesn't accept that the effort to reinstate that 2018 law. Abortion should remain legal in Iowa for quite some time.
And just a couple of other quick issues that could come up this year, probably will, possible new gun laws in the state legislature and also possible new moves on tort reform.
Yeah, the gun laws, again, they haven't been very specific. I do expect a law that would declare Iowa a Second Amendment sanctuary, but that's more symbolic than anything else. So I'm not sure what substantive gun laws they're going to take up. The tort reform, there are two big things that the legislature has not been able to pass in the last 2 years, in addition to vouchers. So vouchers is the one that everybody talks about. But medical malpractice, that's one that the leadership really wants to pass. The House Republicans, again, have been the blockade on that. And also a bill that limits commercial liability for trucking companies. This is really important in part because John Smith, who is the leader of a trucking company based in Cedar Rapids called CRST, he is one of the largest donors to Iowa Republican candidates, and this is a priority for him. But they haven't been able to get it through the House before. And the question is, going from a 60-40 majority to a 64-36 majority, does that get that trucking company liability bill over the line? Very possibly, yes.
All right, it is 15 after the hour, and wherever you're listening to us, that's the time. You are in tune with KHOI Radio's Capital Week, your one-stop source for everything political going on in Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart with Laura Bell, and we're here every week at this time. We have been for 2 years. This is our third year to talk about politics, Iowa style, how it's affecting all of us. All right, quickly, before we get into our recap of what we talked about last year, Brenna Byrd is going to take over as state attorney general, replacing Tom Miller, who was there for 40 years. And some interesting things are going on involving what the Byrd people are doing with the Miller people.
Yes. Well, first of all, Brenna Byrd has talked a lot about how she's going to be suing the Biden administration. She said, I'll see Joe Biden in court. And so I expect in the next few weeks to see Iowa joining more of the multi-state lawsuits that are already on the books and possibly filing new lawsuits. So that has not been, although Miller has joined quite a few multi-state actions, that hasn't been the major part of his office's work. There are about 200 employees in the Iowa Attorney General's office, and mostly they don't spend their time on lawsuits against the federal government. But that's something Brenna Byrd is going to be out in front doing. This got some, there was some reporting by Jared Strong in Iowa Capital Dispatch, and I'm also working on something related to this, that Brenna Byrd asked 19 people, senior people, to resign before she was sworn in. And it's expected that the new attorney general brings in a new team. So things like the chief of staff, the solicitor general had already announced that he was retiring, and a few other people. But some of the people who have been fired, essentially, it was a little bit surprising. The top, the human services division head, the person who works most closely with the Iowa Department of Human Services, the lawyer who's worked for almost 30 years with the Iowa Department of Public Health, which is now, it's merged to be the Iowa Department of Health and Human Services. But this is people who have been working on consumer protection for decades. So it's a lot of institutional knowledge walking out the door.
Right. We should call him Jared Scoop Strong of the Iowa.
Yes, that was a good story.
One more quickie before we get into the coronavirus here. GOP leaders in a deep red Iowa county objecting to CO2 pipelines. You broke this story about the Hancock County GOP.
Well, this is interesting because, as we've discussed in the past, these carbon dioxide pipelines and three different companies have proposed routes across Iowa. It would be something that the ethanol industry really wants. They feel like this will be good for biofuels. And it's very, very unpopular among farmers and people in rural Iowa. And most of these counties that the pipeline would go through are very heavily Republican. Hancock County, routinely, Republican candidates get more than 70% of the vote there. So there have been a lot of county boards of supervisors who are Republican dominated that have filed objections to these pipeline plans. But this one was the first time that a county Republican Party Central Committee, so an actual Republican Party organization, filed with the Iowa Utilities Board saying we're against all of these pipelines. And this is an example of something where I think that people in the Iowa House Republican caucus, they may say, you know, we really want to pass something limiting eminent domain for pipelines. And that could be a bargaining chip that's used when they're talking about either the medical malpractice liability or the school voucher bill, something like that, because the Republicans are very against using eminent domain to take farmland for a project that is basically going to benefit private corporations.
And carbon capture pipelines, three of them are being proposed in Iowa. They are going to be a big discussion point throughout this coming year. And we're going to talk about it on Capitol Week because it's going to be a statewide issue. Let's get it briefly into coronavirus last week. And that's going to segue into our discussion of what we talked about last year. It's the same thing. The state's infection rate last week, 2,148 new coronavirus infections reported. Not all of them. We don't know how many exactly, but that's what was reported. Okay. 40% down. That's good news. And Laura, take it from there.
Well, I think it's good news, but again, a lot of people are taking at-home tests, so we really don't know what's going on with the number of positive tests. The hospitalizations are slightly down. It's about 243 people now, which is It's somewhat high, but I mean, it's not nearly as high as it was. And but where there are still a lot of people getting sick, and the hospitals are still very crowded because a lot of people are sick with flu, influenza, and RSV right now.
Okay, let's take a look back now, and this is going to be fun, on what we talked about 1 year ago, almost tonight. It was January 3rd, 2022. It was a Monday night, and we have the format of that show right in front of us, and here was our lead story that night. Today, this is a year ago, the State Department of Health in Iowa reported a sharp high spike in positive coronavirus cases. The state reported, catch this, 17,773 positive cases in the past week. It is shocking to go back that year, even though we think we remember this, how bad it was at the beginning of the year.
That January 2022 surge was really, really bad. And remember, the positive cases at that time, people didn't have as much access to the at-home test. So probably a lot more people who were testing positive were getting reported into the system. So that may be partly contributing to it. But the hospitalizations were really high at this time a year ago. It was more than 750 people. And that's very a large number. Really, anything over 500 or 600 is puts a big strain on Iowa hospitals. Now, overall, the situation today in the hospitals might be almost as bad because now we have a lot more flu and RSV than we did a year ago. But just looking at the COVID cases, the hospitalizations are like a third of what they were a year ago. But that was a big surge last January. The hospitalizations hit a point that was higher than at any time during 2021.
Almost shocking again to read this in black and white. Our second story that night, again, we're looking back 1 year ago, the U.S. 8th District Court of Appeals ruled that Tyson Foods was not operating under the direction of the federal government and operating the way it did at the start of the virus pandemic. All kinds of controversy involving the food packing plants in Iowa. Did they properly protect people? People started dying who were working there. It was a mess in those food packing plants.
Yes, and what they were trying to do is get these lawsuits dismissed by saying President Trump had said that it's very important to keep food processing open. And so they said, look, we had no choice but to stay open. Governor Reynolds also was encouraging the plants to stay open, but that the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is the circuit that includes Iowa, said no, that that wasn't the federal government was not directing their operations. They may have been encouraging them to stay open, but they weren't directing their operations.
We
So this allowed lawsuits to go forward that are filed by the families of former workers.
also reported a year ago that Iowa was expected to spend, and this was a shocking number at that point, more than $9 million to place 100 out-of-state nurses and respiratory therapists at the state's bigger healthcare facilities for 6 weeks. $9 million for those 100, and that was the going price.
And that actually, that contract ended up being extended for another 4 to 6 weeks later in January because that hospitalization surge continued. And I remember from my reporting on that, that they were actually forbidding Iowa-based nurses from taking those jobs on that contract because they didn't want to incentivize the traveling nurses were getting paid so much more than the average salary. So they didn't want people to be quitting their regular jobs at clinics and hospitals to get one of these traveling nurse jobs.
The expectation was that the nurses would work 20 hours of overtime each week at the rate of $330 an hour. So that equals to more than $15,000 a week per nurse.
Yes, I knew a few nurses who did some of these traveling contracts. They were based in Iowa, so they were doing the contracts in other states, and they were able to pay off a lot of their loans from nursing school. They were able to do these contracts maybe for 8 or 10 weeks and then take several months off because the pay was so high.
And another major story we reported a year ago was that a district court judge had ruled that a wrongful termination suit against Iowa Governor Reynolds could continue. And this one involved former State Department of Public Health spokesperson Polly Carver Kim. And that was really a legal entanglement there.
Yes, and this one is still not resolved, but this is something that is the case was not dismissed. The state government is trying to say that she was an at-will employee and could be fired for any reason, and that she wasn't fired for following policy. And her argument was that she was fired because she was complying with the open records law, and that's a well-established public policy. So we're going to see where this goes. This is still the Supreme Court is going to end up ruling on whether this lawsuit can go forward.
Right. So something that carries over from 1 year to the next and into this year. All right. The Des Moines Register, we reported a year ago, had come out with a list of five things to watch throughout the year 2022, upcoming legislative year. Among them, And this is from the Register. Can Democrats field strong enough candidates against Governor Reynolds and U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley? Well, the answer to that question was no.
Well, yes. Well, the governor's race was a real wipeout for Democrats. But ironically, even though it was such a tough election, I mean, Senator Chuck Grassley was reelected by a 12-point margin. That was only half as large as the biggest margin as the smallest margin that he'd had. He'd always been reelected before by at least 20, 25 points, sometimes by 30 points. So ironically, the Iowa Senate race did end up being more competitive, but the governor's race definitely was not.
And the Register was also asking, how competitive will the state's congressional races be in 2022? Well, they were relatively competitive, but it didn't turn out well for Democrats.
Yeah, so three of the four, there was a lot of money spent, but the Republican Party, they spent a lot of money on the first, second, and third districts, millions of dollars, the Republican aligned groups. The Democrats really only invested in defending Cindy Axne in that third congressional district. The Democratic aligned groups were playing so much defense elsewhere, they didn't really spend a lot of money on the first and second districts. Ironically, last week, a website called Split Ticket came out with a new, it's a complicated algorithm, but anyway, it's looking at candidate strength and how did candidates do relative to how you would expect them to do. And the irony was that all of the Democratic candidates in the first, second, and third district actually outperformed expectations, even in losing, right? So Cindy Axne did about 2.5 points better than their model would have predicted. She still ended up losing by a little less than 1% of the vote, but they would have predicted, based on the fundamentals and other things about Iowa, they would have predicted that she would lose by almost 3 percentage points.
And we have about 3 minutes left for this show on this Monday night. You had reported, and we're going back looking a year ago, you reported that the several political crystal balls had come out with their forecast for the upcoming Senate and House elections, including Iowa's, and the consensus was Republicans were favored to win most of Iowa's congressional races. Well, they did.
They did. And they actually, those ratings ended up tightening over the summer. At this time a year ago, the first and second districts were considered likely Republican. The third district was considered lean Republican. And over the summer, especially after the Kansas abortion referendum, which turned out so much better for Democrats than expected, those ratings were changed mostly to lean Republican and toss up. But in any case, Republicans did end up winning all of those races.
And we also reported that Iowa was among a group of about a dozen states that took action the year before to ban employer mandates or require exemptions for the coronavirus vaccine.
That's right. So Iowa, they did not ban employers from telling their employees to get the vaccine, but they said that the employers have to accept certain types of exemptions for that. So there were Republicans in the state legislature that were trying to get a law passed last year that took a much harder line on employer mandates. They didn't get that through, but what they did get through before the legislature adjourned was a ban on mandatory vaccines for either schools, colleges, or child care centers.
And finally, we reported on another must-watch issue in 2022. Again, we're looking back at what we talked about a year ago, almost tonight. And this one was, will national Democrats kill the Iowa caucuses? Well, we know the answer to that now.
Yes. And I think it was fairly clear, even a year ago, that the writing has been on the wall for some time. I think that it's possible if Hillary Clinton had been elected president, maybe it would have happened even 4 years sooner. But under Joe Biden, it was always unlikely that Iowa would retain its first position on the calendar. And that is indeed what happened.
And the very last thing we talked about on that last show, or that first show last year, was how will Iowa spend all that federal coronavirus money it's received? Well, it spent it on a lot of things.
Yeah, and actually some of it hasn't been spent, and that's partly why we have the surplus that we have now. But yes, the coronavirus money really went toward many different kinds of actions. Some of it is people don't necessarily even associate with the pandemic. But for instance, there was a lot more federal funding supporting the Medicaid program that wasn't directly related to COVID, but it was part of those COVID packages. And that's one reason why Iowa and many other states have pretty large budget surpluses right now.
So we have about 45 seconds left. Next Monday, the state legislature opens its session for this year. It's always a big deal. What's going to happen on Monday? What will we be reporting next Monday night?
Well, we'll be reporting on the opening statements, but I'm going to be looking this week at some of the bills that either state agencies or interest groups are going to try to get through. Some of them not as high profile as the things that everybody's talking about, but a lot of bills most bills that pass in the legislature don't really get any publicity. So I'm going to be looking at some of those marginal issues and see if there are any clues on what the Republican majority plans to do.
Laura, I know you're going to be busy, and so will I this week. It is a pleasure to be starting the third year of this broadcast with you. I just cannot tell you how much I enjoy doing this broadcast, and let's just keep it going.
Absolutely. I enjoy working with you as well, Dennis.
Well, that's it. We have had the Mutual Admiration Society compliments to each other. We also want to compliment Mike Murphy for getting us on the air here tonight and always. But we're out of time. You've been listening to Capital Week on KHOI Community Radio. A reminder that the views and opinions expressed here did not necessarily reflect the opinions of KHOI or its staff. Laura and I will be back next week in this same time slot after the first day of this year's state legislative session. And we're going to talk about everything interesting, important, or entertaining that went on there and about politics in general, Iowa style. We hope you can join us. Until then, we appreciate your time, we value it, and have a safe, happy, and very healthy week.